As fall fills up with activities and obligations, even a small time saver can feel like a big help. Grammarly is an all-in-one writing tool that makes clear, concise communication easier than ever, so you can finish your work earlier and head off to family dinners, social events, and fall weddings. Grammarly is free to download and works where you do, so every project gets finished quicker. Make sure your writing is free of mistakes with Grammarly's free, comprehensive writing suggestions and get an instant take on how your message comes across with the free tone detector. Let Grammarly Premium's sentence clarity rewrites help you find the perfect words on the first try. You'll be confident writing client emails, deadline-driven reports, and presentations without staying late at the office. Get more time back in your day by writing with Grammarly. Go to grammarly.com/podcasts to sign up for a free account. Then get 20% off when you're ready to upgrade to Grammarly Premium. That's grammarly.com/podcasts.
I think that's the one of the main things I've learned, that you can't be delusional. If you wanna be good, then you have to be honest with yourself. If you're not gonna be honest with yourself, then you're not gonna be honest with the audience, and they know it. And then
yeah, they can smell it.
Good.
You're listening to the Write Room podcast with me, Rupen Paul. I'm a stand-up comedian from India, and this is my weekly podcast, a show where I have conversations with people whom I consider accomplished, entertaining, and inspiring.
Hey, hello, and welcome to the Write Room podcast. My name is Rupen Paul, and with me today is a special guest joining me from Bombay, Ms. Sonali Tucker. Sonali, thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, this is great, because I performed with you first probably in 2016 or 17 at Antisocial.
Right. Were we on the same lineup? The Akash wala, na?
We were yes. On the same lineup, yeah.
Yes, I remember.
I think that was the first time. But I think you started comedy very early, right? Like into the comedy scene. When did you start stand-up?
I've been doing stand-up for 8 years now.
So that's 2012?
Yeah, 2012, September 23rd.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Everyone remembers the date, right? The date time. Were you one of the first, one of the type of comics that your first set killed, or it didn't kill at all?
It killed. My first set was like, oh my God, I was so proud of it. And I remember sending it to like all these comedians, I was like friends with one comic from the US, and I sent it to him. And all right.
Did you say a comic in the US?
Yeah, I was friends with a comic in the US.
Pretty cool. And this is before doing stand up.
He used to do Side Me. Okay, and I was also friends with Karan Talwar. Karan Talwar and I had met at a wedding. He was...
Karan Talwar.
Yeah, like
Karan
my...
Karan Talwar is the SNG dude, right?
Yeah. So I'd met him.
Right.
And he had actually encouraged me to do stand-up. And at that time, I was like, I'm not going to do it and everything. But then he encouraged me. And then, I was so excited with it. And like now when I watch it, I don't know what the fuck was I thinking.
Oh, but you have a video recording.
Yeah, so... iBar used to, the folks who run Cuckoo Club, they used to run the open mic at iBar, and they used to record every open mic and like release it on their channel. And then that time we all just thought it was like really cool. Like, oh my God, here's the video of me doing stand up and stuff like that. And then
so this was pre-Hive and pre-Cuckoo Bar.
Yeah.
This is Sudeep.
Yeah. So there used to be like just one, there used to be two open mics in the city, which used to happen like once a month, and they would both happen on like the same Monday, like one Monday a month.
So that's great planning also.
And one was like a club, and like one was like a bar, like an underground bar. And the vibe at the club and the vibe at the bar was like completely different. So yeah.
Right. Was the club, I'm guessing the club was a little more well lit with a lot of positive energy, and the bar was just like dimly lit, or was it the other way around?
The club was like proper, you know, and the bar was like, yeah, man, I want to hear this shit. I don't know how to figure it out,
right.
But like the thing is, the bar scene was more relatable for me because I saw people who looked yeah. like me and dressed like me and had the same experiences. The club was a more formalish setting. Right. So yeah, it's like watching a street play and watching a play on Broadway.
I know what you mean. I think comedy, the environment in which you start comedy is really important, because like I remember Bangalore, we had two open mics as well when I started. So there was yeah. a really dingy lit jazz bar called Take Five.
Yeah,
and then there
it,
was the
yeah.
op. Yeah, Take Five. And interestingly, Jim Jefferies did a set over here before comedy had started in India.
What are you saying?
All right, so there's a... Yeah, he like some guy booked him to do some really rich business dude. You know, those really rich business people, right? Who have a lot of black money. Yeah. So I'm going to get Jim Jefferies to perform at yeah. my party. Right? I think they got him over somewhere earlier than 2010. So there's still a poster of him at Take Five. Yeah, so there was Take Five, which was really dimly lit and was a jazz bar. The lights were all turned down. Everyone was getting like hammered. And then yeah. there was the other thing where it was really brightly lit and there were people wearing like formals and drinking like wine. And it's right. two completely different sets. But what I figured, like, I don't know if it's the case with you. Like the easier place, like the comfort place was like the bar.
Of course. Right?
Like you felt
yeah.
nice doing comedy at a bar.
Definitely.
But like the well-lit cafe just made you a better comic.
Yeah, I feel like, so you would practice, like you would give your prelims in the bar and then you would give your boards in the club. That was my mindset. Yeah.
Yeah. So what was happening before comedy? Like what was your scene like before doing stand-up?
I was signed to be a CA. And I was contemplating a career in dancing, believe it or not.
Right. Is that something you still do?
I dance for a hobby, as a hobby, like just okay. as a, but that time I was like hardcore in it. So I'd like join an academy and we would have like classes right from 8 a.m. to like 9 p.m. So it was like a public academy. So till like 5, they would train the company and then 5 o'clock onwards, the academy would open up to like the public. So you would be like assisting teachers and like you would be taking a class. So yeah, so I was in that hardcore for like 2 or 3 years.
Right. And there was something that you wanted to take up seriously, like dancing at that point of time.
You know, I had never done anything different academically. Like I'd always been set, like in the 9th standard, I knew I was going to take accounts as an optional subject. In my 10th grade, I was going to do commerce and then I was going to do CA and then I was going to join my mother. Like I'd had this planned out since I was a child. So I never really veered
away.
And
both your parents were CAs?
No, none of them are CAs. Both are lawyers actually. But my mother's a stockbroker and my dad is into textiles.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And both were like working and
yeah, like they both have their own thing. Yeah.
Pretty cool. Okay. So you wanted to become a CA, then you find then you somehow find dance and then what happens?
So basically I wasn't clearing my CA exams. So I just wanted to like kind of do something different, kind of take my mind off the studying and then come back to CA with a fresher perspective. And then I kind of just wanted to take a gap year, you know, like I'd never taken a gap year. I'd never like done anything. Like I just stayed away from academics and just like figure something out. And the concept of a gap year is really different for Indian parents, you know.
Yeah.
They don't get it. They're just like, why would you want to take a gap? Like that's the question.
Yeah, why would you want to take a break?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So dancing was sort of that for me. Like it was part-time. Gradually it became like a full-on thing where I was occupied throughout the day. And then my boyfriend then, who is now my husband, he had done like a stand-up course with East India Comedy. And
okay.
he won
Did
that
you say like a
stand-up
course where they taught you stand-up?
Yeah, like he had taken like a 2-day workshop. And I'd seen it in the newspaper right. and I was like, you know, hey, because both of us are big Seinfeld fans. So I was like, this is something you'd okay. like to do. And I think he came in like the top 5 or top 10 in that competition. And he started doing open mics a lot.
Right.
And then I used to go lecture him on and stuff. And then I watched it for like 7-8 months. And I think the more I watched it, the more I was inclined to do it.
Yeah, I guess what you I kind of understand what you mean. Because I don't know if you know, like my dad actually started doing stand-up before me. Do you know this story?
What? No, yeah. I have no idea. That is so cool.
Yeah. So he was doing stand-up. And I think the first open mic he did really well. And then I think he just got busy with other stuff. And I thought like, wow, this is something that I can do better.
Nice.
Right. Does your husband still do stand-up? I haven't seen him at all. I've never met him at all.
No, but
he still do stand-up?
He's a full-time CA. And he does stand-up the way I dance, which is just as a hobby.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at that point, you realize like, you know, this is something that seems fun and this seems something like that. It's something like I would enjoy doing, and you just decided to switch from dance to stand up, or you just decided to stand up like a hobby?
Yeah. I mean, there was no concept of switching, right? It was an activity that happened like once a month. So it was like, oh, you know, okay. I'm going bowling and I watched a movie and oh, today I did stand up. Like it was one of those things. And I think stage time was really limited in Bombay. I think today if somebody starts doing stand-up, like 2 years ago, right? Stage time-wise, they can catch up to very quickly because I think the stage time now is exponential because I can get on stage in Bombay like maybe four or five times a night if I really push it. Whereas initially it would be like once a month, and then it came down to like twice in a month and three times in a week, or it was really sporadic. So I think 3 or 4 years ago is when the stage time actually shot up. So you could even consider that, yeah, maybe this is something I'm doing full time. Because I would watch comics in the US being on the road and trying like so many sets a night, and I'm like, this is not what it is over here.
Yeah, it's interesting that you brought that up. Because I think from a lot of the comedians that I spoke to, you're in a way very close to comedians who do their stuff live a lot, right?
Yeah.
Because you now put out a lot of stand-up videos. You're not like one of those people like I'm going to do a stand-up set every month and have it taped and then put it on my YouTube channel. Like you've been very, I don't even know if you're, have you recorded deliberately, like recorded and put up stuff on YouTube? You haven't, right?
No.
That makes you very, 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 very unique. I think you're the only person.
Yeah, I mean, there are videos, but these are videos that I haven't, like, I have no control over the environment. They've shot it at festivals or they've shot it somewhere else. But I've never shot a video where I have been like, okay, now this is going to go on my channel and this is my audience and I've promoted it. No, never.
Yeah, so you've just been doing only shows. You've just been focused on, you're just focused on like doing live stand-up.
Yeah. It's been my
and does that make it easier for you, because you don't have to worry about, you know, where is my career going next, because I don't have a crowd yet, or like I don't have as big a crowd as that I could possibly get if I put out a video. It doesn't make it easier in terms of you being like really focused and just doing your live shows and just sticking to it?
I feel like I've never had a direction as to why I should put I've been asked this question so many times. Okay, first of all.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I've never really had any direction as to, I'd never had this thing that I want more people to come for my shows. I was very happy going on the road and opening for people. And, you know, if like it's an 800 seater and like 20 people like me, and if they come with like one other person, then like 40 people come for my show once I announce a solo over there. So I'm very happy catering to niche crowds. And honestly, for me, it's a challenge. Like, let me see how many people come out to watch me without me putting my stuff up. You know, like, let me see how many fans of comedy are coming out versus fans of a certain person. Because I'm not going to get this experience. Like, I'm not saying if I put out videos,
again,
they'll do well.
Yeah.
But there will be some impact. It will be a 5% impact or 10% impact. And I'm not going to get this experience again. I'm not going to get people who are coming, 100% of the crowd that is coming just for comedy, or 100% of the crowd that has come just via word of mouth. And I didn't want to miss, like, I wanted to tour the country without this. Like, it was a very deliberate decision. And
right, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing it's like before the comedy era, before YouTube, right? You had to do it you had to do everything yourself. Like, you had to like go and do really well in front of someone else's crowd and then make them your crowd.
Yeah.
And then they reach out to you or they send you a text. They're like, hey, I came for this, but you were really good. And then it'll be like, let me know when's your next show. I said, like, cool, just follow me on Instagram. And then you pull up a next show and they're there at the next show.
And doesn't that feel great?
That feels incredible. Yeah.
I also feel like it makes you work harder. You know, right. Like, they don't give a fuck about you. They don't want to see you. They want to watch the person they paid money to watch. So your jokes have to be really good to win them in the first 30 seconds. You know.
That, or you had to be that type of a person and say, I'm going to fucking work this crowd. I know this is not... Yeah, you just have to work your way through.
Either way, like, you're working on your skill set in that situation. Yeah. So I really enjoy... And honestly, I've never really wanted... Like, I've never really... Like, I've realized that every time when I've pursued anything in life and I have skipped steps, you know, like, I've not worked, paid my dues, that thing has never lasted. So...
Interesting.
I really wanted to pay my dues.
So, you look like you believe in this whole thing of, you know, comedy is a long game and all of that.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I would agree with you on, like, a lot of that, because I think there have been a lot of people, I don't know if y'all met people like that, I'm sure you have in fact in Bombay or whatever, who keep telling you to, like, you know, speed up the process, right? Like, I had people come and tell me, like, I think after I put out something on YouTube, it's like, dude, if you do this, then you can, and say these words and put these captions and then optimize your SEO, you're gonna be famous next week. And my only thing has been like, yeah, but I don't have that much to give next week.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. It's the analytics part of stand-up. I've never gotten into that. It's never worked for me.
Yeah, yeah. Would you rather be in control of your the entire process of stand-up? At least in the beginning, you're 8 years into stand-up, right? You're eight years into stand-up is what you said.
Yeah.
So would you rather be in control of the entire thing, where you have a direction of where you're going, or would you get someone who tells you, like, hey, I know what it does to take you to the next level, like a manager or an agent or whatever it is?
Well, I have a manager, the thing is, I got into stand-up because I'm my own boss. You know?
Yeah.
Now, if I get somebody to tell me that do this, I immediately don't want to do it. You know, I mean, I'm really lucky to have managers who understand me, right? OML really gets my zone. OML understands that I am not somebody who's going to be forced into putting stuff out. And they completely get that. And they've really given me my space. And I really, really love that about them. Because it's really important for your manager to get your vibe, right? So I have, and they've been my only managers. So unfortunately, I haven't had an experience where I have a manager who doesn't get my vibe. But if I have somebody to tell me that this is what you have to do and you should do it, I don't want to do it. Like, I've done exactly in my career that I've wanted to do. And I'm really happy with where I am. And I think I'll continue doing it. And I think if your career is driven by... If your instinct is different from what the person is telling you their instinct, it's never going to be good for you.
Yeah, then it's a toxic relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, oh my God, you want to go to that place? I fucking hate that place and all of those people. Why do we have to do this? Yeah.
I mean, it's very different. Like, again, it's tricky, right? Like, you may be in your comfort zone and your manager has to recognize that, okay, I want to push her boundaries and I want to get her out of her comfort zone. That's okay. But which is something like, you know, just something which is not my vibe and completely against my... It's a very tricky situation, but you need your manager to understand you and have a good relationship with you. And I think that's the best way. If you are in that space in your career where you need a manager.
But so do you have, like, this conversation with your management, like, whoever's trying to sign you, like, right at the beginning? and say like, this is what I'm going to do. And I don't like this, this and this. And but like at the same time, I want this, this and this. Or is this something that you figure out?
No, I'm a really chill person.
Because I've never been in this relationship with a manager. So I'm just trying to figure out how it would be like.
No, I'm a really chill artist, I like to believe. Also, they signed me after they watched me perform. I think they kind of had an idea of... And I think we just got to know each other. We just have a lot of chats. And I think if they've asked me that, hey, would you want to do this? And I'm like, no, this is not my vibe. That's like the conversation ends there. I think the more you, it's like a friendship, right? The more you talk to them and the more they talk to you. And if you tell them that this is not what I want to do, why you don't want to do it. And if this is what I want to do, why I want to do it. And I think communication just helps, makes it easy.
Right. Okay. But do you feel like a considerable difference, like pre-management and management? And post
management. Yeah, for sure. I got an opportunity to open for Kenny in 16, 17 cities, which I probably would, I mean, he would have probably seen me in the scene and given me the opportunity, but I also happened to be signed by them and then I got the opportunity and I got to perform at so many festivals and, you know, so many cities and, MICF happened when they came down to scout us. And I think a lot of the good things have happened to me after management has come in. But management helps you when you work on yourself also before and simultaneously. Yeah. Management can only expedite the process. If you've not worked on your craft, and I think every artist is a little self-aware internally that they know how much they've worked on their craft. So management can't do anything for you if you've not done anything for yourself.
For sure.
Yeah. That's what I think.
So did you set aside like, you know, like I'm going to achieve this and this before I get a manager? Or did you just say like, okay, I know what I want to do and I know I'm doing it. So a manager makes sense at somewhere along this journey.
No, my motto is simple. I just want to do stand up. That's it. That's my only goal. I want to do stand up. I want to write material. I want to get my sets tight. I want to make that laughter. I want to improve that quality of laughter. And that's it. That's all I want to do. I don't have any goals. My goal is to be honest to my craft. And that's it. Like, I genuinely have no goals. Like, I'm not saying it just like that.
Right. No, that's pretty cool. I think you just want to be, just funny. That's it. Funny and do stand up and do sets. Yeah, I know. I have met people like that as well. There are different kinds of people in doing stand-up as well, right? Like, I remember, like, one time this comic called Anand Ratnam, he came home to record a podcast, right? And I had, like, an entire set of stuff written on a to-do list. And it was just kept on the side, all right? Like, I'm going to do this, 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 and then go do an open mic in the night and then do another, all of that shit, right? And he came and I said, dude, you have a fucking to-do list? Why do you have so much of stuff to do or what? And then I realized, oh crap, this guy is so cool because he only wishes to do a stand-up. That's the only thing that's on his mind.
But so your to-do like, list was like career-wise or like what I have to do in the day?
It's both, but it's I would say 70% career-wise and 30% like other stuff, yeah.
Oh, okay, because I have a to-do list to do every day because I am married, so I have like a ton of things to do for the house.
You can't just say everything, it's like because I'm married.
I have a to-do list, there's so much to do. I have to give clothes to the laundry, I have to do this, I have to do that, I have to, like, there's just so much to do. Like, when I was not married.
It's like life-wise. Yeah. It's the life
life-wise
to-do list.
Is just stand-up, yeah. I mean,
but
now,
it's not like a stand-up to-do list.
No, but I'll tell you what, and again, I don't want to bring up marriage, but... After I've been married, I am there's been a slight tilt in the way I think. Like, I've always been this artist, right? Like, I'm an artist and I'm going to focus on the art and everything. And I'm not going to think about the money. But I think once I'm married and then when you think about the future, you also want to be in a position to provide for your future
family, and your future,
the way your parents were able to provide for you, and that's when now it's slightly tilting. So maybe now I'll be like, you know, maybe I need to, I gotta think about how to make some money out of this. And I guess I'm starting to have a shift in that thing. So maybe I'll have some stand-up goals, but right now, since we're talking, my only goal has always been to just do stand-up.
That's pretty cool. That's a lot of focus, right? So do you, so what do you do? Like, do you do something every day, stand-up wise?
Yeah. Yeah.
But deliberately?
I love it. Like, if I don't do it, if I don't go on stage, I am in a really bad mood. I get angry. And if like, oh my God, I don't even want to imagine. Like in the lockdown also, like I forced myself to be okay with like Zoom shows and stuff like that, you know, because I was really pissed. In Bombay, again, as I told you, that with the amount of stage time that's increased, I would get on stage multiple times a day. And like even when I was getting married, like up till the run up, like I was taking up shows till like a day before. And I got married at Mud Island. So my friends were like, ye to ghagre mein chali jayegi Varsova mein show spot karne.
In fact, I think Saurav Ghosh did an open mic on the day of his
He did. I can totally imagine that from Ghosh.
Could understand that, like to some extent. Like, you don't want to miss. You don't want to miss a.
My lehenga was too heavy, so I couldn't. I was like, I'm sitting here on the mandap. I can't move.
Did you have stand up at your wedding? Because there were a lot of comics.
No, of course not. Yeah. No way. After I heard Vaibhav's story that he bombed at his own wedding, I'm like, I'm never doing that.
That story is fucking hilarious. I think he told me this a year on the podcast as well. I think the story is he bombed and so did Karunesh and so did everyone, but his dad killed.
Amit Tandon was there.
Probably Amit Tandon was there, but he told me like, dude, my dad was the funniest among everyone.
Yeah. His father-in-law destroyed.
Oh, his father-in-law, right. Like, I don't know if you have this right now, or if you're, I don't know how much you've made peace with like Zoom shows, but like for me right now, even if I have to think of a new thought, right? Like when I have a funny conversation with someone, I'll be like, hey, that's pretty fucked up and you should do it on stage, right? And, but now, even if you put a thought on like whatever note app you use on your phone or wherever you make note of jokes, you're like, yeah, but when am I gonna do this? And so it just accumulates and it's just like a mechanical process, like how have you navigated that? Have you do you enjoy Zoom shows after hating it for the first couple of months, or are you finding another incentive to, you know, just write new jokes and keep that going?
I didn't enjoy Zoom shows in the beginning at all. Like, I remember the first Zoom show I did, I was sweating from my armpits. I was sweating really bad from my armpits. Like, I don't think I was this nervous even before the first time I did stand up, you know? But I got used to it. And I mean, I actually even enjoyed a few Zoom shows, I'll be honest. But I don't love it anymore. Like, I'm the same audience a lot of times keeps overlapping. And, you know, I hate the fact, honestly, I got into this job to tell people what I think. I don't want to know what you think. You know, I don't like the fact that the audience has the same amount of power as the comedians. I don't like that they can just turn off their camera, mute themselves, the way they lie down and watch. Problems here and there, but I just don't like... I mean, because I'm used to it a certain way, right? I'm constantly comparing it to real life shows. If I didn't have that, I wouldn't have a problem with it. So I'm constantly... It's like you're constantly comparing your present to your ex. You know, oh my God, he got me and he was so nice.
You're great at analogies, by the way. Second analogy, which you're killing it out after the state board and prelims. Yeah, so, I know what you mean. You're just constantly comparing it to the good times.
Yeah, so like even the horrible shit, your ex, you're like, oh my God, so what if two people were there? They were still people.
They were still looking at you.
Yeah. So yeah, like I did enjoy a few shows, so I won't deny it. Again, it kept me in the writing of writing material. I think I have a good 11 tight minutes that I've written. Now we'll find out when I do my first spot.
yeah. How do you keep pushing yourself when you we're just focusing on just the shows, right? Like for me, I wouldn't say like I'm the same as you, because I'm looking at it like, okay, now I have this set, and then I have this set, and then I have this set, and I'm going to merge these sets in some kind of a storyline so that I can eventually record it for YouTube and retire that portion of the material so I can write some more new material. So what is your entire process in this without like the video thing?
I want to focus on building hours. So that's always been my, I feel like if you ask me for a goal, I would say like, I've always wanted to build an hour, and I'd always wanted to build, like, I just want to constantly keep getting it as tight as possible. Keep going back to older premises, thinking of new taglines. I think I just want to focus on building hours, man. I just want to make my material as tight as possible. And I consume a lot of comedy. I consume a lot of comedy. So I think that also keeps me in the loop of constantly writing. I read a lot of comedy books. And
Of technical comedy books?
Yeah, like I love reading about the history of comedy. I love reading books by a lot of comedians. I love knowing the history of... Like I've realized that I get along better with comedians. I get along with people, but I get along better with comedians who are aware of the history of comedy. Like I like people who've invested time in knowing the history.
Yeah, because you're all on the same page and you have so much of shit to talk about. It's like it's like a nerd fest that happens. It's like, dude, you also know this weird story. Yeah. It's like, yeah, dude. Yeah. That's
And I like knowing like something that I don't know about comedy. So I invest a lot in reading books, and I watch a lot of comedy from all kinds of, like every type of language. Like I'll watch it with subtitles, but I'll watch it.
Like French stand-up and all of that.
Yeah. I'll watch it.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'll watch it. I don't know their names, but I'll definitely watch it if it's in a different language. I remember I went to Turkey, and some guy who I was friends with introduced me to like an Egyptian comedian. And I really enjoyed his stuff as well. And I did an open mic in Turkey, and a lot of comics were Turkish. And so I was like, yeah, they seem to be enjoying it. So I might enjoy it if I watch it with subtitles. So I think that's how I got into the loop of watching comedy from different parts of the world.
So tell me this, because you've seen like comedy in like Turkey, right? And I'm guessing, I don't know what they speak in Turkey, but I'm going to just go on a limb and say Turkish. Right. Nailed it. Finally, something is, my guessing is coming to some use. But yeah, so like in India, right? Like when you see like comedy that's in English and comedy that's in a regional language, for some amazing reason, like a comedian in a regional language is just so much more fucking funnier and just is getting a lot of laughs in comparison to an English comic, right? So is that the same with like seeing like a Turkish comic or a comic who's doing comedy in like Mandarin or something like that?
I feel like whether it's any regional comedy, I feel like, first of all, people who do comedy, like your language in which you do stand-up gets influenced by factors, I think by two or three main factors, which is the pop culture you consume, the books you read, and the language you think in. I think that plays a major role in what you talk on stage. For me, all three, I only watch Hindi movies a lot, right? So
everything else is English. I think in English, I read only English literature. My education has been English. We were in a school where we were discouraged to talk in Hindi. Like, I remember I had a couple of Maharashtrian friends. Yeah.
Was
I had
that
a couple
everywhere
of Maharashtrian friends. Yeah, oh my, at least in my school, it was there. But I know it's not there in all schools in Bombay. But my school, they were super strict. Like, I had a couple of friends who were Maharashtrian. And we would talk in Marathi just to, like, not let the other girls know what we were talking about. And they complained, dude. And then we were taken to the principal. And the principal told us not to talk. And I am a good child. Okay. So if the principal has called me and told me that you can't do this, I am scared.
Yeah. You won't stand up and be like, no, but like, I am like from Bombay and I need to speak in Marathi. You just be like, no, I don't want to be getting into trouble again.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, and I think the thing with regional languages, whether it's Turkish or Mandarin or even in India, it's the same concept, right? Like, this person is talking like me, like how I speak at home.
Okay.
And that, therefore, I find it relatable. It is the language of my heart. It's the language of the heart. And you will always find that more relatable than like, 80% of the country will relate more to Ye Jawani Hai Diwani than 2 weeks notice, you know.
Got you.
So I will relate more to Ye Jawani Hai Diwani than 2 weeks notice. So mm-hmm. I think it's the same principle, according to me, that works in stand-up as well.
So because of you like consuming a lot of content, does that fuck with you? Like if you have an observational, or if you have an observation, or because you'd be like, oh, has this been done before? Or everything has been done before? Or do you just stick to your life and be like, this is my life and I'm going to tell stories and stuff and jokes from what I've seen through, as opposed to what I've observed?
If I have seen something that has been done before, and if the same thought has occurred to me, I will not do it again, ever. Because I'm very principled. Because I wouldn't want somebody to do something that I have done if they've thought of it later. So it's just a matter of principles there. But if somebody does something after I have done it, I will not change that, because ethically in my head, I am not compromising on my morals. And I always record every show that I do. So if, you know, like ethically,
if someone comes and says, hey, Sonali, how can you do this? You'll be like, hey, fucking check the recording, check the date, check the timestamp.
You have to be a little careful about that, I feel, in this environment, because as a community grows and, you know, you have to be. But also, I record to remember my thoughts, you know.
Right.
But as long as you're ethically in the right for you, that's all that matters. That's all that matters to me. So if I have had the thought, and if I've just had the thought but I've never done it on stage, and I've watched somebody else do it in their special, I will not do it, because that's just wrong. So many people have things in their head, right? And they watch you do it, and then it comes to them that, oh, even I thought of it. Too bad.
Right. I've had this, I think I've had this conversation before with another comic, I think with Arnav Rao. And I was just like, I think he was telling me, like, you know, have you noticed that there are bubbles in stand-up? Like first when stand-up first started, it was about like different people from different places, like Gujus, whatever, right? And then it slowly moved to something personal, like, hey, everyone's talking about middle class shit. Then it moved to like this, then it moved to like mental health. And now the weird thing is it's mental health, right? Like everyone has a mental health joke, everyone has a therapy joke. And when you hear about it, it's like, yeah, you should speak about mental health, but how many depression jokes, dude?
That's depressing.
Yeah, and he was like, I think he was saying, like, the way I make sure that I'm not in a bubble is to kind of know what's happening everywhere, like to know everyone's, like, what, like, in somewhat like what you were saying, like the jokes that are happening in Turkey, jokes that are happening in Singapore, like stand up across the world, stand up in the history, and all of that, right? But I was like, yeah, but how much it's like, isn't it like really extensive? Like there are so many jokes that have been done about everything, right? So like, instead, if you just stick to your shit, right? Like, and just like made sure like you're 100% honest about your life, and the stuff that you're saying on stage is like really the stuff that you want to say on stage. Do you think that you'd avoid that issue of, you know, doing someone else's joke, even if you have not checked out everyone else's joke?
I feel like, even like, okay, so I am very personal. I only talk about myself.
because that was the main thing about me to get into stand-up, where I wanted to talk. Like, I felt like I wasn't heard and I wanted to just talk, right? So I wanted to talk about myself.
But yeah, I think that's almost all of us.
Right, exactly. So now, if you're talking about yourself and you're trying to make, if you observed something and you are thinking something, an observational joke sometimes might have happened with someone else.
Right.
You know, and I feel like I don't watch to make sure that what I'm thinking nobody else has done, but I enjoy stand-up. I really right. enjoy stand-up. I love watching stand-up. I can never get tired of watching, talking, and doing stand-up. So, I mean, yeah. the best way to connect to me is just know, if somebody knows stand-up better than me, I mean, I'm going to get along really well with that person. So I watch it yeah. because I am a consumer, and also that's like, I'm not watching it as an artist. I'm watching it as an audience member. So
right.
Yeah. Like I'm disassociating like the work part. Like I just love watching it. So
okay.
I don't mix the two. Like I'm not like, I don't feel like, if I watch their stand up, it's going to influence me or something like that. Cause I've been in it for 8 years to kind of have a distinct voice. So I know I'm not going to get, not going to start talking like someone else all of a sudden overnight.
So do you think that it helps in some way? Like where, even if it's like very on a subconscious level, right? Like, you know, you just being a fan of stand up, right? And just watching stand up because you enjoy stand up. Do you think that, have you seen it help while you are doing stand up? Apart from the influence part of it.
It helps you learn just different styles of doing stand-up. Just like the way I watch a lot of movies, and I'll watch like all sorts of movies. Like I'll watch a lot of Korean films, and I'll watch like a lot of like old films, and like a lot of like Hindi cinema, of course. And you just come, like how every director has a different style. That way you come to know, you just see that, oh, okay, this is another way to do to be on stage, you know, this is another way to tell stories. You know, it's okay to have a silent auditorium, just listen to, like, you just see so much more. And I have always wanted to do stand-up all over the world. So I love watching international comics, like, you know, like I watch a lot of Indian comedy as well. Like I consume a lot of comedy. Like if I have multiple spots a day, after I finish the fourth one, I will always stay back at the open mic and watch everybody and then leave, because I just love stand-up. So yeah, right. I mean, it just helps to watch people, you know, like there's no course in stand-up, right? Like nobody can teach you. You have to watch and learn.
Yeah. I remember a long time ago, I think I was working with Karunesh in Bangalore. And I think this was I don't know if you performed at the old TCC, the one at Church Street in Bangalore, not the new one, the
yeah.
old one.
Yeah,
the
yeah,
old
yeah.
one, you performed there? Yeah, awesome. Yeah. I think Karunesh was doing a weekend, and then he came back after a couple of months, and we both were working together again, right? And there was the same dude who was there at the first show. And like a few months later, he came back, and he was basically coming every Sunday. He was like right. the original person we talked to.
Oh
talked
my God, Rasam. Oh shit.
We'll remove that.
Damn it.
Yeah. And Karunesh told him something very interesting. He said, like, dude, you've been coming to a lot of comedy shows. And I think you want to do stand up. And the best way to do it is like, think of a few jokes before coming to your first open mic. All right. Don't sign up on the open mic. Just come and see everyone do it. And then go back and then think about your set. And that'll give you a better idea of what's going to work, what's not going to work. And then come and do it the second time. So I think it's kind of what you are saying, but in a different way, and watching a lot of videos. Like, say if you're going to Turkey, right? And you plan on doing a set or a spot at Turkey. So if you watch like some Turkish comedians, you'd be like, oh shit, that's what they're laughing at. So, okay. So like, I know what how I could move around the bits in my set to like, you know, have a halfway decent set over there.
Yeah. Yeah. So I went backpacking to Europe once, and in my hostel, there was an open mic
And I think I had just started doing like an hour in Bombay. And the open mic, I called up the organizer and he was like, yeah, sure, you can do like 7-8 minutes. And I was so scared because I didn't know if I had 7-8 minutes without Indian references, you know, with no Hindi word as a punchline that would appeal to somebody from Netherlands and Finland and France, you know.
Oh, and I'm completely like, forgetting the fact that like a backpacker hostel has like all of these different internationalities yeah. in the same place, right? Yeah.
Right. And not everyone's English is up to the same level. So you have to yeah. really appease everybody. And at that moment, I was like, I don't ever want to be in a situation like this is my goal. I want to be in a foreign country and be able to perform at least 15 minutes at ease if I have to get on stage. And I think right. that was a goal sort of that I had at that point that so I would consciously make a decision to like write in English and perform, you know, like I would. Yeah, like that was. So I was like, I don't want to be in that situation. And then when I did that open mic and then I was backpacking for 2 months and then I would do stage time in every city that I would go to. And it kept on evolving. And I was like, oh my God, I'm enjoying this so much, performing in different countries. I want to do this like for the rest of my life. And I don't want to restrict myself performing just to an Indian audience. Like you can perform all over the country to Indian audiences. Like Indians are everywhere, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. This is a very niche goal, but then this is what I preferred.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool thing, right? Because I don't know if you met this guy called Matt Davis. Have you met Matt Davis?
No, I don't know who he is.
It's a fascinating dude. You got to meet him at some point. Will happen. Okay, so Matt Davis is, I think he's based out of the States. When I say based out, I think that's where he was born at least. But that's all he's been doing. I've been doing comedy since 2014 and I know of Matt Davis ever since. And he constantly keeps just traveling around the world. Like he does shows in Turkey, nice. In Istanbul. I think he did a show in Mongolia. Yeah, he did a show in Mongolia. So he's been doing all these really obscure comedy scenes.
Nice.
And he kind of runs rooms now across the world. So he manages all of this. And yeah, so he pretty much does the same thing. So how many countries have you done so far?
So that's Istanbul, there's Phnom Penh, which is in Cambodia, there's Melbourne, there's New Zealand, there's Auckland in New Zealand, and there's Christchurch, and then there's Berlin, Amsterdam, Vienna, Krakow, and yeah, that's about it. And Budapest, yeah.
So tell me one thing, because I've often thought about it, right? Just stand up in India, right? Like, because you're doing stand up in India and I think we're so locked to like using Indian references and all that, right?
Yeah.
And now if you had to go abroad, like if I have to go to like say anywhere, like say Turkey, I'll have to write like my entire bit from the scratch to make sure like I replace like the Indian references and all of that, right? So did that take a lot of time for you to rewrite the bit? Did you change references or did you specifically like change your jokes or did you write new bits? What do you do?
No, so I didn't write anything specifically. I had universal bits. I was just disappointed that in my whole hour, I have only 7 or 8 minutes that I can do in front of an international audience, right? So I was just, but I feel like a lot of the material I write is universal. There are some bits that can't be replicated and I don't make a conscious decision to replace anything. Like if I want to write something, if it comes naturally to me, it comes naturally. But like a lot of the stuff that comes naturally to me is, as I said, I think in English and I read a lot of English books. So a lot of the jokes that 80% come to me in English without Indian references. And if it comes with Indian, I love those jokes that come naturally to me, which have Indian references and stuff. I enjoy doing those jokes more. But yeah, a lot of them don't come and I know it'll work internationally if I go. So I don't bother too much about it. Like I don't make an intention. Like I don't decide ki theek hai abhi, you know, I have to write this for Paris, for people in Paris. Like I don't think like that. Then it won't be organic.
Right. I have a few more questions for you with respect to this entire traveling the world doing comedy thing. All right. Like, the first thing I want to know is, like, I've often thought about this again. Like, dude, if I was born like in the States or in the UK, right, it'll be so much more easier for me to do comedy. But right now, like, even if I had to go abroad and say, like, for example, I had to stay abroad, right? And mm-hmm. I had to just go there and stay. Like, if any other profession, I would easily find, like, if I had to do, like, an IT job, it would be so easy to find an IT job. I'm like, fuck, dude, I got to do comedy. So, do you think it's possible now or maybe in the future for, like, Indian comics to, like, mm-hmm. leave the country, move across to another country and try to make a living doing stand-up in a few years?
Yeah, man, of course. You do it. You just have to love it. You have to love the process of going. I love the process of doing sets, multiple sets, hopping, bombing, going to dingy places, going to good places, going to perform. I love the process. I just love it. I can't tell you. I genuinely just am in love with the whole process. And if you are in love with the process, if you love it so much, you will love it in like a New York or a Boston where the opportunity is just so much more, right? And if you're good at it, you're going to get better opportunities and you're going to come up. But I understand the thing that could set you back would be like a financial security. And gotta do a job, man, in the day for that.
Yeah.
Have to do it. You have to do something. Because if you're going to be thinking about money all the time, you're not going to be able to give your all to stand up. And then you're going to just hate yourself and you're going to hate stand up and you're going to be bitter and you're going to be like, I'm not getting the opportunity and this one's getting all the opportunity and yada, yada, yada. And yeah, the thing is, you have to give it your all and you can't see, you can't have this mentality what the other person is doing. Or you can't be thinking things like, oh, I'm putting in so much, but this guy's not putting in, or this girl is not putting in that much, and they are
getting that's horrible.
Better.
You can't question someone's what someone else has, right? I think that's just like being a loser. Yeah. I'd say, like, oh fuck, like, you know, everyone else has everything what I've been working for, and I'm not getting anything. I think that's like the biggest loser.
You can't think like that, because if you feel like you're giving 100% and then you start thinking like that, you're going to start giving less than 100%. And then your output is going to be lesser. So you're essentially harming yourself. So I feel like you can make a career in stand-up wherever you want to. You want to go abroad, you can do it. You don't need a precedence that somebody else has done it, so now I feel like I can do it. You haven't seen anybody else do it, but you want to do it. Go do it. It'll happen.
I think that once again comes with a thing of, you know, just like thinking of comedy more as a longer game, as opposed to seeing something like, you know, as comedy as something which gives like really quick results. And it's such a conflict because, like, as comics, we really like quick results, right? Which is why, like, even if a joke you have not heard a laugh in a minute, it's fucking worrisome.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Which is the worst thing about seeing yourself while editing a stand-up video. It's like, so much of time has gone by without me saying anything funny.
Yeah. Oh my God. I hate watching myself. I hate it. Like, I've recorded once and I saw the footage and I was like, oh my God, I can't do this. I can't see it. Shut it.
Yeah, I think Jaspreet Singh, I think I had him on the podcast thing like a few episodes ago. And he told me, like, he doesn't even see the edit. Like, he just has someone who does it completely for him. He's just like, fuck, I can't do that, man. I just let someone else do it. And I just put it up and promote
it.
Okay, let me ask you another question, okay, which I thought of during this conversation. So how do you're talking about, like, you know, you got to take a job, like, just take care of the financial thing. And I completely agree, by the way, because it completely takes care of that side of your entire life, right? So you're not worried about providing or your responsibilities and all of that. But has there ever been a time as like a freelancer, right, where you ever had the worry of money coming into your writing process? And how, if that's happened, which I'm sure it has, how have you navigated that problem?
So I worked as a CA and invested in stocks for like a really long time. I still invest. I just don't tell people about it because then the minute you enter, it's like either you introduce yourself as a comic, then people are like, tell me a joke. And then if you say that you invest, then comics are like, give me tips. And it's like the most stressful thing, you know.
I can completely imagine that conversation happening.
It is not pretty because I'm like, what tips? How can I just give you tips out of the blue? I don't know what portfolio, I don't know how much money you have. I don't know. I can't just tell you invest here and you'll do it, right? And yeah. It's really stressful giving tips to people because like if that stock doesn't work, it's like my fault. So if I've given you advice about some stock, I am going to be checking every day so that you're making money because I'm going to be that stressed. So I invest a lot. I do a lot of research over there as well. So yeah, but there have been months where I've been a little tight and I do take up writing projects. But thankfully, my investing zone is, touch wood, going decent. So I don't have to take up too many writing projects. And I don't love taking writing projects. Like, I don't want to devote my funny time towards anybody else. Like, I will only take up a writing project if I really love the team, right? So the people who I'm working with, there are only two reasons for me. Okay, maybe three. Number one, the project has to be something I like. The team has to be my friends, or it has to be people who I can learn from. That's it. Like, and I'll only take up like one writing project in a year because it's fun to work with comedians, but I won't take up multiple writing projects. Like, I don't want writing to become like a steady income stream for me because I'm creative maybe for like, I am my best productive 3.5 hours in a day. Okay.
Right.
Where I will chill.
When you're talking productive, you're talking about creatively productive, like creative stuff, like coming up with new stuff and all of that shit.
Yes. Like my mind, when I won't be tired to think about newer angles and newer tags or different ways for 3.5 hours a day. And I don't want to be writing for somebody else when I'm doing that.
Right. It's very amazing how you found a way to make all of it work, right? Like you have like the parents doing the stock, broking the investment and the finance thing. And I said, that's such a cool side gig, by the way. Like if you're a comic, right? Because all you have to do is you can just work and just keep monitoring stuff and just keep reading up on shit and be like, okay, I'm going to do this and this. I don't have to go and work. And I don't have someone email me stuff. Like you got to do this, this and this throughout the day.
Yeah.
So it gives you a lot of time as well.
I've been going to the stock market since I was like a baby. So like I am very... Like, I loved working in the stock market. I really love it. I mean, if I wasn't doing stand-up... I mean, stock market is like another... Working with a bunch of improvisers. So... So, it's a fun stream. But yeah, I like investing and I have a good knack for it. So, why not?
Awesome. I just want to end with like this one question which I try and ask.
Yeah, sure.
Comics. What has been like the one thing that has not gone according to plan in these 8 years? If you've had one thing that now that you mentioned that you don't have specific goals, I don't know why I asked that question, but like, but has there been anything like, you know, you thought was a certain way and then when you actually cross that place, you're like, oh, it's completely different from what I thought.
I've never thought of anything in my career. My plan was to do stand-up and I'm still doing stand-up and it's going as per plan.
Awesome.
The thing is I never think about what's not worked. I never think about it. So I'll like, it won't come to me also if I think about it right now. Maybe if I overthink it before I go to sleep, but now I've also been sleeping well. So it won't come to me.
Which is a very uncomic like thing to say.
Yeah. Oh no, I've been having great sleep. In a lot of work. I've been putting in a lot of work to change my sleep cycle, like a lot of work. So, like I'm super strict with myself. Like I'm hard, very strict with myself. No, but I can't think of anything. Like I can't think of anything where I'm like, oh, this didn't go according to plan. Like I don't harbor negative feelings. Like stand-up is a very positive thing for me. So I don't think anything bad.
And that's also, I think that's also the benefit of being specific to just being funny and just working on the R's.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I actually have another question which I thought of, which I made note of, right? Actually didn't make note of it, made note of it in my mind. But like the like we're talking about like writing these R's, right? So do you so when you start writing these R's, do you have a general idea of what the R is going to be, or do you just like, you know, write a bunch of bits and then find a way to put them together?
I feel like a lot of people put a lot of thought into this is the theme of my hour and this is the arc. And I think that works for a lot of people. But for me, I just focus on writing bits. And I feel like the theme of your hour will be defined. At every age, your hour is going to be different because your experiences have changed that much between your last and your current. So your type of comedy, your experiences, your style is going to change, right? And you can't force a theme. Like how you have evolved as a human is going to define your arc. And it is going to be different because you don't do comedy the same way today as you did 4 or 5 years ago, right? For sure you don't. So it doesn't matter what theme it was. The style is what, or your experiences is what defines your hour, is what I feel. My first hour had a lot of single girl experiences. My current hour has a lot of marriage jokes and a lot of marriage experiences. So I don't have to give it a theme, but it's going to come eventually with the more you live. So
the bits come first. The bits come first. The jokes come first.
The joke, the funny comes first. The jokes come first. And then, yeah, then you figure it out how it works. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. So what is the I think this is the last question. What is the one thing that you've learned in this entire 8 years which stands out from the other stuff?
Have patience. Have patience. Just keep working. Just keep writing funny jokes. Be honest with yourself. If a bit has not worked, don't go home and say, "Yeah, I think it did okay." No, it didn't. If you have to think that I think it did okay, then it didn't do okay. And have a, like, I have a pretty high standard of, and I think every comic in their own head has their own standard of what a quality of laughter should be. So don't be delusional. Don't be delusional. Be very honest with what is funny. If you watch somebody kill, then, and if you want to be there mentally, then have that level of laughter. So be clear.
I think that's absolutely right what you said, not being delusional, because a certain type of laughter and a certain standard that you have in your mind, right? And I think a lot of times I've seen from other people that they kind of compromise on that because they've not put out like stuff in a really long time. But like I've not been able to do that. I think the last time I met you was when we taped at Akash Mehta and Friends, right?
And
I think I recorded something there. And I was sitting with the editor, and like 2 minutes into watching the footage, I said, like, dude, let's not do this. And I just said, fuck it. It's not going to happen. You just know in 2 minutes. Like, this is not the stuff that you like.
I feel like, I mean, you just have to be, I think that's the one of the main things I've learned, that you can't be delusional. If you want to be good, then you have to be honest with yourself. If you're not going to be honest with yourself, then you're not going to be honest with the audience, and they'll know it. And then
they can smell it.
Good.
Yeah, like I think Seinfeld was saying something in some interview I listened to when he put out the last special, right? I forgot what's the last special called. 60 minutes? No, 23 hours to kill. That's I think
23
special,
hours
right?
to kill. Yeah.
23 hours to kill. He said, like, I may not do the next special in like another 10 or 20 years because the next special has to be better than this. So it's going to take some time.
Yeah.
To get better than what the stuff I've just put out now.
Yeah, like I love Seinfeld, okay? And I know a lot of people who don't like Seinfeld. They're like, oh man, that Buddha doesn't have it and yada yada yada. I'm like, that man is like the richest comic in the world, okay?
Yeah.
He's probably doing something right, okay? Mm-hmm. And I love his humor. Like I'm a big Seinfeld fan. I've grown up watching Seinfeld. It was one of my biggest influences to do stand up.
Like
so
I have a picture of it right in front of me. Like I'm just on my writing table.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. I love Seinfeld. So and he is a great student of comedy, and he's been a big inspiration.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even at that higher level, he's constantly dissecting jokes and talking about comedy. It's so fascinating, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's just comedy. Like, you, there's never enough conversations that you can have about comedy with another comedian.
It's an endless well.
Like, even if it's a person you disagree with, it's a long comedy debate and both of you have stories.
He's coming from a place of knowledge to disagree with, and so are you, and that's great.
But thanks so much. Thank you for doing this. Quickly plug your social media handles so people can catch you.
Sure. You can find me on Instagram at Sonali Thakkar. That is SonaliThakker.
Yes.
And please follow the right one, because there is another Sonali Thakkar. You know, a lot of times people will mail me on my Gmail, and like the email will go to like some other Sonali Thakkar. Okay. And
that,
like,
by the way, guys, if you're listening to this, that's the Sonali who does like all the stock advice, the other Sonali.
And you can follow me on Twitter, which is also Sonali Thakkar, and Facebook page, which is also Sonali Thakkar.
awesome Thanks, Sonali, for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Write Room Podcast. If you like my work, do follow me on Instagram, where I go by the handle of @PaulRupen. That's PaulRupen. Do subscribe to the podcast on whatever application you use. My podcast is out on a bunch of streaming applications like Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, and on Google Podcasts. And if you like the podcast, do give me a review. See you next week with a new guest and a new story.